Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
This week on Meat in 3, we're exploring the intersection between food, agriculture, and competition. Learn how a chicken raising contest in the 1940s led to the poultry industry we have today.
And they were going to run a contest and try and develop what they would call the chicken of tomorrow.
We'll also venture into the world of agricultural video games, where a new set of tractors is making a lot of fans happy.
The biggest addition to 19 was the John Deere's. That's what everyone was hyped for.
And we pay a visit to a group of Indian restaurants that aren't on the friendliest of terms.
Usually they wait for my restaurant, but after a long wait, they go to next door or downstairs. But this is how they do business. They completely copy whatever we do.
Embrace your competitive spirit and be the first to listen to new Meat in 3 episodes by subscribing now. That's Meat plus sign THREE, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen in izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people. I tried to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Masud Ghazi, who has Japanese food and restaurant blog on Instagram under Tokyo Manhattan. His posts not only describe restaurants he has visited, but also include many other elements behind dishes, such as history, culture, and cooking methods. And he appeared on episode 125, 136, and shared his favorite Japanese chefs and restaurants in Paris, New York, and Tokyo, as well as sushi restaurants in New York and Tokyo. And today, we'll continue our conversation with Masud with the focus of ramen shops. During the last 10 years or so, ramen became rapidly popular all over the world, and many unique ramen shops were born in the US and other parts of the world. And there's so many of them that it's hard to choose which one you should visit. So to help you decide, Masud will give you recommendations along with the basics of ramen. But before you start, Japan Needs is available on Heritage Radio Network website as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Needs. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now let's start our conversation with Masud Ghazi. Hello, Masud. Welcome back.
Hi, Kiko-san. Thanks for having me on again.
Okay, so you're a very precious asset to talk about various restaurants. So first of all, for our listeners who have not listened to the past episodes, 125 and 135, please tell us your background, which is very interesting.
Sure, yeah. So I'm ethnically Afghan. I've never been to Afghanistan. My dad was with the Afghan embassy in the 70s. When the Soviet invasion took place, with the Afghan embassy in Japan, when the Soviet invasion took place, and he ended up seeking political asylum in Japan, and he became a professor at a university, Sophia University, and I was born and raised in Japan, 28 years. I don't look Japanese at all, but the only passport I carry is that of Japan. So imagine passing through customs and immigrations around the world with an Arabic name, ethnically Afghan, and a Japanese passport.
And a Japanese passport is the second most convenient
something
passport
like that. Yeah, it's a very good passport. Yeah, so I've lived there for 28 years. I'm fluent in Japanese. I worked in Japan. I went to an international school there. So that's my background.
Mm. And you have a day job too.
Yes, I do have a day job.
All right. So let's talk about ramen. So since David Chang opened Momofuku Noodle Bar in 2004, ramen became kind of buzzword in New York and now in the entire country and beyond. And I think Momofuku caught New Yorkers' attention because of the non-traditional approach to the traditional food, including the use of high-quality bacon in dashi. And ambience of the Momofuku Noodle Bar is also very sleek and cool and looks like a cafe wine bar. Also, shortly after Momofuku Noodle Bar opened, notable Japanese ramen restaurants opened branches in New York, including Ramen Setagaya and Ippudo. So at this point, it's not an exaggeration to say that ramen is a part of American diet. And in any case, what is ramen by definition?
Yeah, so at a very high level, the ramen is part of what's called the Japanese soul food. So it's bold, it's hearty comfort, it's umami rich, it's an explosion of flavors. And at a very basic level, again, ramen, like many other things in Japan, came from China. This was back in the 17th century, multiple waves, but ramen now has completely Japanized, what I call Japanized. It has taken its own life. And when you write the word ramen in Japanese, you no longer use the characters for a foreign word. You use the actual domestic Japanese word. So it's distinctively Japanese. And what is ramen? Ramen essentially is soup noodles. It's using Chinese wheat noodles. Usually comes in four or five different kind of broths. Most common is pork broth, chicken broth, and some kind of a fish broth. Some chefs like to mix them. It's generally consumed in Japan, at the very least, with things like gyoza, which is pan-fried dumplings, or shumai. So it still has the image in a lot of places in Japan as it being a Chinese food, and we mix it with Chinese-like appetizers.
Mm. It's funny, right? So in Japan, gyoza comes with ramen normally, but here in New York, because Momofuku Noodle Bar served the pork bun.
Yeah.
So ramen people serve a pork bun with ramen here in the States. That's a very interesting association.
Yeah, that's an interesting distinction you make. In Japan, you don't really find pork buns. It's always either gyoza or shumai. And in New York, it's usually pork buns. And obviously, ramen has gone global. The major players, the likes of Ippudo, Ichiran, Santoka, have been exporting ramen globally. And it seems like a lot of people love it.
Mm, right. So for listeners who are not familiar with the details of ramen, I'm sure everybody has eaten ramen at some point of their life, but what does a bowl of ramen consist of? Like you mentioned briefly, but to analyze what's in there, and some ramen connoisseurs get stuck with what's in there.
So the traditional ramen, especially if you're in Tokyo, the broth is usually chicken and skipjack tuna, so katsuo. It's usually very hot. It's served in a big bowl. Chinese wheat noodles, which is usually very thin. It comes with naruto, which is a kind of fish paste. You don't see it often in the United States. You see it very often in Japan. It also comes with shinachiku, which is bamboo shoots, and some chashu, which is a Chinese word, and that means roasted pork. And some scallions. So at a very basic level, the traditional Japanese ramen bowl is that.
Mm.
And obviously it has evolved not only in Japan, but outside of Japan, and you get all sorts of mixes currently.
Right. And you said broth. Broth means basically it's dashi and a tare, right?
Yes.
So the dashi is, of course, it's a chef's stock.
Yes.
And your house stock.
Yes.
And the tare is more concentrated flavor. And they are mixed in the bowl.
Yep.
So that's like your style.
Yes.
That's your flavor.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think, of course, noodles can be thick or middle thick or medium thick or, thin. And I think the difference between ramen noodles and the other kind of noodles, that's kansai, that's alkalized the noodle. I think it's increased the thickness
yes.
of the gluten, and it's kind of make the color yellow. So that's kind of very ramen specific culture compared to any pasta or udon or soba.
And in ramen parlance in Japan, I'm sure you know, but we say the men has koshi, which is the noodles are al dente and chewy. That's a hallmark of good noodles. And the soup has koku, so it has depth.
Mm.
A lot of advertisements, TV advertisements, when they talk about ramen, usually they employ those words. So that's a very important element of ramen.
Mm. You say koku. It's Howard McGee, who's a food scientist, came to the show like a while ago. And there are five tastes, like the umami is the fifth taste.
Yes.
And then the sixth taste, that's kokumi.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard that.
Yeah, I think it's new. But to me, it's kind of like long-lasting, deep, rich flavor. But it's not the savoriness. It's something additional to, something like a sensational thing.
It's depth to the flavor. It's another layer to the flavor, I guess.
Right. So that's the keyword of ramen, one of them. So you just run through the ramen history, but originally it came from China, right? And then I think early 20th century, more Chinese culture came to Japan and then eventually developed to Japanese style. And I think because it's reasonably priced, it's cheap, cost is cheap to, you can make a really tasty thing with cheap ingredients. So during and after the World War II, when Japan had nothing to eat, they became very popular, and then they came up with instant ramen. So that's like how ramen became so popular. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, just to add a few things there. So it came from China in 1660. Again, multiple waves. That was the first wave. And then trade with China and Japan was relatively robust in the 18th, 19th century when Japan opened up some of its ports. And there were, a few Chinatowns around these ports. And they would serve ramen there. And then the third wave came, actually four waves. The third one was in 1910 when in Tokyo, Asakusa, they opened the first ramen shop. Essentially, a Japanese guy hired Chinese chefs from Chinatown and created Rairaiken. And this is why in Japan you see the words Rairaiken pretty often, because it was the original ramen shop. So that was 1910. This is when, ramen kind of first became a little bit more Japanese and catered to the Japanese masses. And then post-war is really when ramen took off. There was a rice shortage, so the government pushed wheat, and this is together with the U.S. government. A lot of overseas Japanese that were stationed out there came back and brought back the culture and, looking for new jobs. A lot of people started their own yatai, which is street food, and they were serving ramen. So, and again, to your point, that's when the instant noodle, I think the year was 1958. Yeah, Nissin Foods created the world's first instant noodle, and it's considered as one of the greatest innovation of the 20th century in various polls that came out of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1971, was it? Nissin Foods came up with cup noodle, which was another revolutionary idea. And by 1980s and 1990s, ramen proliferated. It completely Japanized. They changed the way they write, again, to my earlier point, ramen, using hiragana, not katagana. And then I think mid-90s and towards the first half of the turn of the century, ramen just went global. And now we see ramen everywhere. Not, just regular ramen, but very Japanized ramen. Mm. And interestingly enough, if you look at the word ramen, it's originally Chinese la mian. I'm probably not pronouncing it correctly. And if you look at the Chinese characters, the kanjis, it means hand-pulled noodles. So the original ramen was hand-pulled as opposed to using a knife. Now, obviously, not a lot of places, or I haven't really come across any place that, hand-pulls is other than Chinese places. That's the origin of the word ramen. It comes from ramen. There are other sort of theories out there as to why where the name ramen came from, but that specific explanation seems to be the predominant one.
Mm. I wish I could eat the hand-pulled ramen. That sounds really delicious.
Yeah, they have that in Japan. I'm sure there are places in New York, yeah, you know, they usually have a display and they hand-pull
right.
it. But the Chinese ramen, the flavor is completely different. It's much more simple. It's just pretty much bland hot water with the basic sauce and hand-pulled noodles, whereas the Japanese ramen has a depth and flavor. And even the Chinese and the Taiwanese make a distinction between their own ramen, ramen, and Japanese ramen, and they call that Japanese hand-pulled noodles.
Right. Okay, so... Yeah, so especially last, I think, since the beginning of this century, 21st century, the ramen became more gourmet food in Japan as well. So, like, more personalized flavors, styles, and then I think it's reflecting the popularity of ramen in the whole world. So, anyway, so in terms of, you know, we talked about the ingredients, but the flavor-wise, what's the variation of flavors?
So... Again, there are a lot of different flavors now. A lot of chefs like to mix it. To your earlier point, they want to create their own flavors. But very broadly, at least in Japan, there's three or four categories. One is miso, which uses miso paste. We also have soy-based with chicken and katsuo serving as the underlying flavor. And pork bone, and this is very popular overseas, especially in New York. A lot of places you go, they serve tonkotsu. Ton means pork pig. Kotsu means bone. So it uses pork bones in order to create the broth. And it's very similar to the Chinese paitan. It's a deep white color, yellowish color, and it's full of flavor.
And it's more viscous, like viscosity, right?
Yes, absolutely. And this was originally served in Hakata in Kyushu for laborers. It was very quick to make. They had the broth, and the noodles are very thin. It literally took three... Even now, if you go to Hakata and eat Hakata ramen, which they don't call it Hakata here, but back in Japan they do. It's the pork broth, tonkotsu ramen. They serve it in 30 seconds. It's very quick. The noodles are really thin. It's minimal ingredients, and it's just, you know, to fill yourself up with deep flavors. So that's the pork bone tonkotsu ramen. There's also the salt shio ramen, and finally curry ramen. So those are the four or five major categories of ramen in Japan.
Right. And also, it's very regional, so to say unlimited variations of flavors. But in terms of style, you know, we started to see, you know, of course, the classic soup-based ramen, but some called kind of cousin of ramen, mazemen. Without soup, it's kind of like pasta looking. So it's kind of the pie of ramen is rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah, every day at this point.
To your point, there are 5,000 ramen shops in Tokyo, apparently, as of 2-3 years ago, and 24,000 ramen shops all over Japan. So to your point, there's a lot of regional varieties from Hokkaido, Kitakata, Tokyo, Yokohama, Hakata. Those are the major ones that come to mind. And each has their own distinct flavoring, noodles, the way they create and present it. And finally, to your last point, there are a lot of derivatives and cousins of ramen. There's the mazemen, which seems to be pretty popular in New York. A lot of places serve mazemen, and we'll later talk about the various ramen parlors in the New York area, but almost every place I've been has mazemen. I don't know why. I guess it's, you know, the penchant for Manhattanites to try something new and different and continuously innovate. So there's mazemen. There's also tsukemen.
I heard one of the chefs told me it's easier because the dashi takes a long time and the space as well. So if you have mazemen, you don't have to, you know, spend time in the space and keep it, you know, perfected version of it. So that's kind of economical aspect of it, I think.
That makes sense, and it resembles an Italian pasta dish, but, you know, with Japanese flavorings, basically. So there's mazemen, there's tsukemen. Tsukemen is when the noodles and the broth are separate, and usually the broth is deeper and heavier in flavor, and you dip the noodles and you consume it. Various places in New York have tsukemen also. There's hiyashi chuka or hiyashi ramen, which is consumed in the summer. They don't call it ramen. They still call it cold china is the literal translation. Not very common in New York. It's a summer dish that I always miss. But again, it's using Chinese wheat noodles. And finally, curry ramen.
I think that hiyashi chuka in the summer, that could be a big hit because it's so easy. It's not broth-based. And you just, there's a package, open it, and then put the tare on top. And it's like a quick salad, noodle salad.
Don't tell anyone. We can open a place and make a lot of money.
We should discuss after this. All right. So, okay. So, one thing we want to discuss, that many people have seen the movie Tampopo, which came out in 1985, and the whole story of the film revolves around ramen. So maybe you can tell us about it.
Yeah, so Tampopo is actually pretty well known in the United States. It's Japan's take on the spaghetti western, the Italian movies. It's called the first ramen western. They employ elements of, you know, the American cowboy in the movie. Some very famous actress, Ken Watanabe, and Itami Juzo is one of Japan's top film directors historically, joining the ranks of forgot off the top of my head the other famous director, Kurosawa.
Mm.
He's done many movies. A good number of them are controversial. He's very much into satire. His movie Marusan Onna was talking about, you know, exposing the other side of Japanese mafia, which actually got him lynched, and he got in trouble for that. He was quite the artist. He ended up committing suicide, but a lot of his movies have a lot of impact, and it's one of my favorite movies. So Tampopo essentially means dandelion, and that's the reason why there are a lot of ramen places, not just in Japan but outside of Japan, that use the name Tampopo for their ramen restaurant. And it's essentially a story about two truck drivers that stumble upon a run-down ramen store run by a single mother who's been abused by her wife, and they help launch and make the ramen store successful. So at a kind of superficial level, that's the story, but it's a satire on Japanese culture, so there's various scenes of various elements of Japanese idiosyncrasies being brought out in the movie. Mm. The mafia is portrayed in the movie. The executives, Japanese salarymen, the high society, the lowbrow society, the bums. So it approaches Japanese society, Japanese culture, using food and predominantly ramen from various angles.
Mm. Right, and there's a famous scene, how you taste ramen.
Oh, yeah. So it's one of the first scenes in which young guy, truck driver, sits next to an old, experienced ramen eater, and they spend about 3 minutes talking about just how to consume ramen. It's a classic scene, and it's probably one of the most famous movie scenes in the history of Japanese theater. But you essentially begin by observing the bowl. You don't jump into it. You appreciate the gestalt. You savor the aromas. You appreciate the jewels of fat glittering on the surface. The shining shinachiku, it's almost poetry. The seaweed slowly sinking, the spring onions floating, and then you concentrate on the pork slices as they play a key role, but they stay mostly hidden. And then finally you caress the surface with chopsticks to express affection for the ramen. You poke the ramen, you poke the pork, the chashu, you move it to the other side of the bowl, and then you quietly apologize to the pork by saying, "See you later." So this in itself takes about a minute and a half, and then the remaining minute and a half, they talk about how to consume the rest of the ramen.
Mm. Well, it's funny because it's real, right? Because it's a ramen so seriously taken, and that's how ramen chefs pay attention to that details. And it's funny because everybody tend to have a kind of mindset. You don't eat, well, some people might just eat, but it's as much as people eat sushi at the very fancy sushi restaurant. There is a commitment for diners too. So I think it's whenever I eat the ramen, I think of that scene.
Yeah, it's almost the philosophy in Japan. It's kind of the way of life. I mean, you have chefs that dedicate their entire lives to perfecting ramen, to serving the best ramen, you know, best presentation. Ramen is almost borderline a religion in Japan.
Mm, I totally agree. So listeners, if you haven't seen the movie Tampopo, you definitely should.
Oh, it's a great movie. It, again, it's a comedy. It's a drama. They focus on death, sex, food. Everything that is part of Japanese culture comes out in that movie, again, in the form of food.
Mm.
And it's one of the first food porn movies in that was out in the 1980s. I mean, now with Instagram and Facebook, you know, there are a lot of people that are food bloggers, food porn. It's very predominant. We hear New York being as one of the top, you know, food porn cities in the world, the way they just show food and talk about food. But Itami Juzo grasped these concepts back, you know, some 30, 40 years ago and produced the whole movie around it. And it's only now that we see, you know, shows like Netflix that comes out with, you know, Chef's Table and all these other shows about food. In that sense, I think Itami Juzo was ahead of its time. And not only was his focus just on food, but he was more the philosophical aspect, the satire in Japanese culture. So there are multiple levels of comprehending that movie. So in that sense, it's very deep, just like ramen, I guess.
That's well said. All right. So we'll take a quick break here. And then when we come back, we'll discuss the Matsu's favorite ramen shops. So please stay with us. Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hey, are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Kathy Irway, and I'm the host of Eat Your Words here on HRN. Every week, I sit down with food writers to talk about their newest work, from colorful cookbooks to food memoirs to exposés on the food industry. It's all meaty topic for discussion. You can find Eat Your Words wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
2004. Welcome back. You're listening to Japanese podcast from Live from Studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Atema, and my guest today is Masud Gyausi, who has a Japanese food and restaurant blog on Instagram under Tokyo Manhattan. He appeared on episode 125 and 136 and shared his favorite Japanese chefs and restaurants in Paris, New York, and in Tokyo, as well as on sushi restaurants in New York and Tokyo. So let's talk about your favorite ramen shops in New York.
Yes, well, Akiko-san, when you first told me to come speak about ramen, I had a very hard time figuring out which ramen places I should feature. There's just a lot of ramen in New York City and a lot of good ramen. And again, very innovative. You see things that you don't see in Japan, but still true to the nature of ramen and the way it's prepared and presented. So today we have, some 7 or 8 ramen parlors that we're going to discuss?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. So do you want me to start talking about just one by one?
Yeah, sure.
Great. So I guess we'll start with the obvious ones. Obvious because these are global names. It's well advertised. A lot of people know about it. And although personally, because so many people know about it, I initially didn't really want to cover it, but it's still a standard. They still did, they were responsible for spreading Japanese culture. I thought it's important to review them. So the two or three sort of predominant ones here, Ippudo, Ichiran, and Santoka.
Okay.
So Ippudo is Hakata ramen. It's, again, the pork broth, pork bone broth, tonkotsu ramen, which is all over Japan, a lot in Southeast Asia, and now in various places in the United States. I think they opened their third one in New York City. I know they have at least two. Widely popular in New York. It gets very long lines. When it first opened, there were 3-4 hour waits.
Mm.
And this is so the white, the deep white colored pork broth, which is full of flavors, full of umami, the thin noodles. And the difference between Ippudo here in New York and Japan is that Ippudo here is more like a restaurant in which you go in and spend some time and have appetizers, have drinks, they have a bar, and then you finish up with a ramen.
Mm.
Whereas in Ippudo in Japan, it's you walk in and you walk out. And the true nature of Hakata ramen, the tonkotsu broth ramen that was served in Kyushu, where it originated, was, again, to my earlier point, to cater to laborers. They didn't have time. It was quick in and out. And even places in Tokyo, outside of Ippudo, they have Hakata ramen. It's you walk in. It's like a stall. You eat. It takes them 30 seconds to make, and then you eat for maybe 2-3 minutes, and you're done and you're out.
Mm, that's interesting. So that's a really distinctive cultural difference, right? Because I interviewed the Ippudo people first time they opened in the East Village, and it's hard to get the idea of appetizer, entree, dessert kind of concept for ramen dining out. So some people, you know, as the New Yorkers, probably didn't get to ramen because they got too full eating appetizers and they couldn't believe it. I'm sure they got adjusted so well. They have, I've seen their noodle production and facility as well. So they make their own noodle here, and then it's really, they're doing great job educating people about real ramen.
They also supply their noodles to various ramen shops. As an example, we'll talk later, but Ishida Ramen gets their ramen from Ippudo, and I think it's specially made for them.
Mm.
And from what I understand, their Midtown West store in the basement, they have a state-of-the-art ramen noodle factory, which is quite impressive. I haven't seen it. I don't know if you have. I'd love to go one day.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm jealous. yeah, I'd love to go see.
Yeah. All right. So And you talked about Ippudo, and the next one?
Yes, so Ichiran.
Yep.
Ichiran is, I guess, Ippudo's competitor. I used to go to Ichiran, you know, pretty often back in my Japan days, some 10, 15 years ago. And it's also Kyushu Hakata Ramen, so the tonkotsu pork broth. The sort of distinctive feature with Ichiran is that they have dividers.
Hmm.
It's more common in Japan, less common here. They so there are two Ichirans, I think with three now, but the one in Brooklyn, they have a common area, and they also take the dividers out if need be, if it's a big group. But in Japan, when you sit down in Ichiran, there are dividers, and people shush you if you talk. I don't know about now, but at least 10, 15 years ago. And the idea is you want to be laser focused on the food, on the ramen bowl. And
like
you don't even
Tampopo
see.
Movie.
Yes. You don't even see the face of the servers. There's a, you know, a bamboo curtain, and they kind of open up, and all you see is their hand, and you use a little menu pen and paper, and you write what you want, and you slip it under that. So the whole philosophy behind that is, you know, you focus on the ramen, there's limited talking, there's, you know, no limited conversation. Conceptually interesting, the ramen is great, it's delicious, but based on my experience eating at Ichiran here, I don't think people pay attention to the dividers. It's more like an amusement. Oh, look at this, it's interesting.
Actually, on episode 138, Kayla Copeland, who is in charge of PR at Ichiran, came. So listeners, if you want to know more about Ichiran's very unique dining experience, please listen to 138. So, all right. And
the third one, this is another global brand. It's one of my favorites also. It's called Santoka. They have them in Canada. Actually, I was in Toronto last weekend and stepped into Santoka. This Santoka, there's one in New Jersey in the Japanese market in Edgewater. So this is basically pork broth Hokkaido ramen, originated in the 1980s, again, a global chain now, and they specialize in shio, salt ramen. So the flavor is light salt, but mixed with pork broth.
Mm.
And they're also known for their pork chul, pork cheeks, They call it the toroniku. Toro means to melt in your mouth, torori. It's also the word used for fatty tuna, toro, because it melts in your mouth. And niku means meat. So it's literally translated melt in your mouth meat. So they take the pork joel and they roast it. And it's super soft, super juicy, and really tender. So they have that ramen, which is delicious. And obviously, because of its global nature and its fame, the broth is very good, very deep in flavor. And they serve it just like Hokkaido ramen with a lot of corn and butter.
Right. Well, I actually went to the website and checked that the founder founded... the founder... decided, he swore to his family, I'm going to make a ramen so that I can make you happy. And then that means very healthy and not too salty, like you said. And it's just delicious, good ramen. So it's kind of like, if you want to feed this ramen, your family with this ramen, that must be really good and healthy.
Oh,
and
it is good. So. I don't know about the healthy part,
yeah,
but it is delicious.
Well, relatively speaking. It's a comfort food anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've noticed, interestingly enough, ramen in New York is less greasier than ramen in Japan and Tokyo. And I think that speaks to people here being a little bit more health conscious. If you want to, you know, succeed in Manhattan and some of the outer boroughs of Manhattan, the ramen has to be healthy. It can't be, you know, like half grease and half broth. And there's places in Japan you walk in and, you know, you have a whole half an inch layer of, you know, essentially grease on top of the ramen.
Right. But I think, like you said, you know, this lighter style of ramen is distinctive. So it's kind of like we exported to Japan in terms of, you know, the vegetarian ramen or different lighter style ramen started to be more popular in Japan too. So,
oh, absolutely. I mean, in Japan, historically, ramen is, you know, is catered toward truck drivers. I always tell my friends this is truck driver food originally. And it's probably, you know, the last 30 years in which it has been catered more and more to the masses, became more refined, a little bit more sophisticated, and to your point, now catering to vegans and vegetarians. And almost every ramen store you walk into in New York, they have a vegan or vegetarian ramen. At least when I was living in Japan up until 2011, you never really came across vegetarian ramen or vegan ramen. They're all pork broth, chicken broth, and there's always chashu in there, and usually pretty greasy.
Right, yeah. That's kind of what people expect in Japan. It's that specific greasy, you know, the classic components. So it's hard to go beyond. But I think the influence from overseas, it's like sushi rolls.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's changing, expanding the market, which is great. Right. So what's next?
So we covered Ippudo, Ichiran, Santoka. And to my earlier point, you know, the tonkotsu pork broth is pork bone broth is very popular here. So I sometimes get tired of those flavors, and I seek flavors you find in Japan, the sort of the classic shoyu, classic Tokyo. And there are a couple of places that serve this, actually. Minka, it's one of the older ramen establishments, 2004, before, you know, ramen became a craze in New York, which is probably the last 5-10 years. These guys started making ramen in 2004. There are 15 different options of ramen, 5 different types of noodles. So they have a very full menu. And I think their signature dish is the Minka Shio Ramen, so a salt ramen. So again, if you want to have a wide array of different kinds of flavors and noodles, Minka is the place to go. And it's delicious. There's usually a line there, and it's in the Lower East Side, like most ramen parlors.
Right. When I learned the founder used to be a jazz musician. So
yeah.
That's kind of romantic element about that. All right. So what's next?
Nakamura, also in the Lower East Side, opened in 2016. It's as if you're stepping into a Tokyo-style ramen parlor. The outside, the ad or the storefront has ramen and gyoza in it. So, you know, the perfect combination, what the Japanese always eat with ramen, gyoza. So they serve gyoza there too. Minka, by the way, serves also gyoza. They also have a wide array of ramen. Their signature dish is the torigara soy. Torigara is chicken broth, chicken bone broth and soy. They also have a yuzu dashi, which is light and very asari.
Right.
As the Japanese like to say, they also have curry flavors, maze men, and they make their own noodles at Nakamura. And recently he opened a maze men store right next to Nakamura and called Niche. I still haven't been. Curious to see it.
Mm.
But another good spot.
Right. Yeah, actually, he came to the show again. Shigetoshi Nakamura came to the show on episode 50. And he really was a ramen legend. He really got a reputation in Japan. He decided to pack up everything and move to New York. And yeah, so he's really forward-minded person, creative. And I think someone like him is going to change the traditional culture of ramen. So that's great.
You know, you got to appreciate some of these ramen chefs and entrepreneurs. I mean, they give up everything and they just dedicate their whole life to noodles and soup and served in various ways. They keep trial and error, different kind of broths. And, you know, some succeed, some don't. And they spend a good amount of their time and resources in order to deliver the best ramen, the most flavorful to diners.
Mm. Yeah, and I looked up the Niche and that's the topping of maze men, because without soup they can play more with interesting, unique ingredients. So they have a ribeye steak, main uni, sea urchin, and house smoked salmon, house double smoked bacon. That sounds really good.
It does sound good. And they're all sort of Manhattan buzzwords right? that people like, you know, double bacon, Sam smoked salmon. And what's the first one you said?
That's a ribeye steak.
Ribeye, yes. Mm. And uni, there's a uni craze in New York City too.
Right.
So guess he's hitting all the top hits there with his maze men.
Right. Yeah, I'm so intrigued to go there. All right. So what's next?
Let me shift a little bit. We'll cover Yuji Ramen. Mm. And interesting enough, you introduced me to this place, Akiko-san, yeah. If you remember. And not as Yuji Ramen, but as Okonomi. This place has two names. It's the same store. Okonomi is their... Okonomi means, I guess, in Japanese, literally translated, whatever you like, whatever pleases you. And they serve what's called Ichiju Sansai, which is the traditional Japanese breakfast. Ichiju Sansai, one soup and three dishes. And it's usually some kind of a fried fish, rice, a vegetable dish, and a soup. And that's during the weekends, I believe. And at night...
During the week, breakfast, lunch.
Oh, okay.
I think 7 days because I go there very often.
Yeah, I know. And you live very close, right?
Yeah. Such a dangerous location to me. Yep.
And dinner, they serve ramen, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep.
Very simple menu. They have maybe one or two maze men, three bowls. And because of their nature of being a seafood supplier, all the broths are seafood based. And I think it's the first time I came across it, but they have what's called the tsuna kotsu. Mm. Tsuna is tuna, obviously. Kotsu is bone. So they use tuna bones in order to create their ramen. And it has an interesting touch to it. It has a depth and flavor, but more of a tuna. I'm not sure fishy is the right word, but more of a seafood touch to the ramen.
Mm.
And I think it's delicious.
Right. It's clean. And actually, Yuji came here a couple times on the show and discussed all his philosophy to promote
really?
The
I'm
Japanese
sure.
fish
yeah.
culture. So actually, he started Okonomi and the Yuji Ramen to make everything sustainable, no waste. That's his philosophy. So he opened the retail fish shop. So it's kind of like the other way around. He just to make everything waste, no waste, production system, he just opened everything else. And he has like the little Kyoto style sushi place.
Yes, that's right. He opened a sushi place. I haven't been. I really want to go. We should go. We still haven't gotten eaten since together since our last show. But ramen is a lot of, you know, things that are left over. You throw it in a pot and you heat it up for maybe 1 or 2 days and then you have the best broth. So I guess it's part of his philosophy to deliver ramen at the end, which takes everything he's used in his kitchen and turns it into broth.
Right.
Is that's probably his philosophy, I would think.
Yeah. So, you know, you need the bones for dashi and then you have to utilize the other pieces, then he serves breakfast.
Yeah.
That's not enough. You need more bones.
Yeah.
And then you have to have a retail shop to make the most of it. So that's a very sustainable business.
Yes.
And ecological mindset too. So All right. And what's something
next,
different?
Next, let's cover, Shuya Cafe de Ramen. Mm. So it's they mix ramen, coffee shop, and a lifestyle shop all together. So you walk in and you experience the Japanese sensibility of, you know, the French touch, the furniture, the simplicity. It's literally walking into a some kind of a coffee shop in Setagaya, but they also serve ramen. Their broths are pretty light. They're well known for their cherry stone clam broth. They mix it together with chicken, and I think they mix it also with pork broth. I forgot. But the distinctive feature of this place is using cherry stone clams, and it adds a whole different dimension of umami and flavor to the broth. So there's a seafood clam component, and then there's a pork chicken component. They also serve buns. The chef there, Shuya-san, used to work at 108. So he has a few sushi pieces here and there. And Shuya is also the name of the designer who also designed places like Sechu Yokota. So you see similar furniture that you see there. So I guess they, you know, Shuya also refers to not only the chef of that place, but also the interior designer of that place. It's located in Astoria. Delicious. Everything has, they pay a lot of attention to details, like their coffee. It says where the coffee beans are from. Like, if everything on the menu has, you know, there's a reason behind it. There's a philosophy behind it. They make everything in-house. Not sure about the noodles, but their chashu, their menma shinachiku. So a lot of craftsmanship goes into this place, and it's one of my favorite. If you haven't been, you definitely have to go. Yeah. We should go together.
Right, because I think coffee, you know, the third wave coffee and ramen under one roof, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Kind of lifestyle.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle place. Yeah.
Right. How cool is that? Okay, and you have also Ramen Ishida.
Yeah, Ishida's a great spot. It's just one gentleman that is running the place. Of course, he has assistants, not in the kitchen, but with respect to taking orders. Everything is in-house. He has a shoyu-based ramen, no pork broth, no tonkotsu. So very Tokyo style. He is from Sugamo, and Sugamo is known for its ramen in Tokyo. It's a shoyu-based ramen, and he also serves it with porcini and truffle tapenade on top of it. So there's a It adds another dimension to the ramen. It's light, asari. It's a delicious broth. I don't know how better to describe it. Again, it's in the Lower East Side, very close to Nakamura and Mr. Taka. So for all those who haven't been, I highly recommend it. They don't have a very extensive menu, maybe 4 or 5 different types of ramen. But the ones that they serve, he's perfected the art. And when he presents his ramen, it's also very beautifully laid out. He makes sure all the noodles are, you know, aligned with one another. So it's a great spot.
Right. And I heard that this is good for vegetarians.
Yes, I think he has a vegetarian one too.
Because it's so hard. Basically, dashi is totally rich in pork or chicken or fish. So yeah, if you are a vegetarian, you want to go to this place, Ramen Ishida. And the chef used to be at of Ippudo East Village, I heard.
Yes, and he also was a bartender at some point in his life. He's been in the U.S. for, I think he said, over 14 years, so a long time. He opened this place about, I think, 2 years ago. And he's really perfected the 3 or 4 bowls of ramen that he serves.
Right. And he gets his noodles from Ippudo.
Correct.
So awesome.
So again, if there's two camps in New York City, there's the Ippudo Ichiran pork broth, which you find everywhere. And then there's like the Ishidas, the Shuyas, the Yuji ramen, which don't really focus on tonkotsu and trying to deliver a new, different, / traditional type of ramen, focusing on soy, chicken broth, and mixing in clam or fish broth.
Right. So that variation, I think, is making everything interesting.
Yes. As, right. You know, New York, Manhattan loves to innovate, and you see innovative sushi, innovative ramen, also in this city.
Right. So the ramen is very popular, not only in Japan and the U.S., of course, as we discussed, and in many other countries. For instance, we had Italian chef Luca Katapamo on episode 65, and we discussed his casa ramen in Milan, Italy.
Oh, wow. I was in Milan over New Year's. I didn't go. I should have gone.
He's such a cool guy. So why do you think ramen is so appealing and popular globally?
Well, like many soul food, you know, this is Japanese soul food. It's delicious. It's cheap. There's a lot of flavor depth. It's filling. There's carbs. It's, you know, umami rich. It's a flavor explosion. It's bold. It's hearty. It's a comfort food. And it's relatively, I guess, easy to make.
As long as you're really creative as a chef.
Correct. Absolutely. I mean, you can own a shack and operate the best ramen. And it's, you know, casual food, so you can have a small stall with 5-6 tables. You can also do demai, so takeout. There's a reason why there are 4,000 places in Tokyo and 24,000 places in Japan just serving ramen.
Right. And noticeably, many fine dining American chefs decided to open a ramen shop instead of pursuing fine dining paths. So, yeah, let's see what's going to happen in the future of ramen. All right, so thank you for joining us today, Masood.
Thank you, Akiko-san.
So keep dining.
Yes.
And come back for more.
Sure.
All right, listeners, if you'd like to know more about Masood's discoveries of Japanese cuisine, follow him on Instagram under Tokyo Manhattan. And also, I give you all the list of all the names you heard today and the best ramen shops Masood recommends on the show page. So you don't have to worry about remembering names or listen to get the name correctly. So, and if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akiko-katayama.com. Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.